Hey, it's Scott MacArthur, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac. If you're hearing this, please follow the link in the show description to subscribe to our new feed for more great sports talk and interviews from Ashley Docking, Mike Zigomanis, and me.
Thank you for calling Pizza Pizza.
Yes, I'd like to make a reservation for four.
I'm happy to take your order, but you don't need a reservation.
Excuse me?
You want to try the new gourmet thins, right?
How'd you know?
This has been happening a lot lately. It's a 10-inch thin crust, perfectly sized for one. Or get a few to share, like creamy truffle or pesto amore. And sir, no jacket required.
What about a tie?
New gourmet thins, $7.29 each. Call or order with the app for pickup or delivery only at Pizza Pizza.
9671111. Order pizzapizza.ca.
This is JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
No managing of loads required here. We are here on a Thursday morning for a fourth consecutive day. Good morning.
Good morning. I tried.
Yeah, have you tried?
I tried. I spoke to the league. I spoke to management. They would not sign off on my suspect medical note. So I'm here.
You have a suspect medical
with you guys.
Medical note. How would you have that medically treated? Well, it's all legal now anyway. I mean, who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
CBD oil, THC.
It's not like we're hitting up Molly and cocaine on a Thursday morning. You know?
No.
It's all medicinal.
No,
all
they're not.
Natural.
They ain't going to be writing about us in The Athletic. We're fine.
Congrats on your feature.
I've been asleep for 3 days, but...
It's fine.
Raps beat the Kings last night. And it was a close game, certainly through that second half. And then you flip over to the Clippers game and a certain fun guy isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes some consternation among some national broadcasters. I have to say, like, Doris Burke's one of my favorite.
Sure.
I think she's as good as it gets across any of the top four sports in terms of color analysis on national broadcasts. But I was not anticipating, A, hearing that from her, such a strong opinion on Kawhi Leonard sitting last night with Milwaukee in town to take on the Clippers. Now, this is the front of a back-to-back. Clips have Portland tonight. Let's play the Doris Burke clip and then react to it.
I believe the league has a long-term problem. When it pinches them, I don't know. But Kawhi not playing... to me, is ridiculous at this point. I don't understand it. The league also, I believe, is and should be concerned that their best players are not playing on nights when they're on national television.
So that's Doris Burke with Golic and Wingo mm-hmm. on ESPN Radio. I think the Portland Clippers game is on TNT
nationally
tonight, so it's mm-hmm. a back-to-back national night for the Clippers, except on a different
network.
On the Turner own stuff
yep.
tonight. So, but I mean, it's one thing for an ESPN exec to get on the horn with the NBA or to get on a call with the Los Angeles Clippers. It's another thing for one of its premier broadcasters to go public and say, look, this is a problem.
It's twofold for me because there's two arguments you can make. You can talk about what the importance of load management is for the athlete. And I will say, Kawhi Leonard is still a big deal in Toronto. Hello, hi. Leading the show at 6 a.m. because he's still the guy, the Kawhi Leonard effect. So you can either think about what load management means for the player in terms of their freshness come playoffs or the longevity of their career. And we saw firsthand exactly what load management allowed for Kawhi Leonard to do for the Raptors and bring a championship home. So that's one argument. And I hate to take sides, but it's the player's side to a certain extent. The other argument to be made, which I think is valid to a certain extent, is that fans pay good money to go and take their families to professional sporting events. We did the rough math a couple of months ago. And, you know, a family of four can spend easily $1,000. easily on one night when you think about tickets, parking, gas, food, swag, whatever, dinner before, whatever the case may be, you're some fun pops for mom and dad. You're spending at least a grand for a family of four. So if you come and you want to see Junior's favorite player and that gentleman is not playing, I understand that there will be disappointment, but it's a business. And the split here is the business of the broadcasters, TNT, ESPN, who have the national games, who want the stars in the mix, or the business as it refers to the team and the franchise, who doesn't necessarily care about anything except winning if you're in a position to do so. And how am I going to be best situated once the time comes in the postseason to win? And does that mean sitting Kawhi against Giannis? Let's do it.
Why would the Los Angeles Clippers do anything other than what the Toronto Raptors did last season? I mean, what did Kawhi play? Like 60-ish games last year?
Isn't he injured? This is the whole thing. This isn't just a matter of fact that they're sitting him out, right? I understand where you're going.
They're listing the knee as a thing. You know, it was the quad situation that was sort of
how many stars
a couple of years ago in San Antonio.
Well, when ESPN comes out like this, how many stars are actually sitting out on a regular basis in the NBA?
It's been an issue. It started with the Spurs. It started with Greg Popovich saying, "Hey, Tim Duncan, you can calm down. You've played close to 10 seasons. So let's go 75, 78, closer to the end of his career, 58, 60 games.
End of his career.
No, but not end, the tail half. Like Tim Duncan played for a really long time. And yes, Kawhi Leonard has a chronic injury. That's what's been diagnosed. So there is an importance to load manage. LeBron James got in a lot of hot water a couple years ago because he was sitting on nationally televised games. And here's the counter argument to play the first game against Milwaukee and the Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo versus playing Portland. Everyone wants to see the stars clash, and Tracy McGrady on The Jump was like, there's no way you could keep me out of a game against the reigning MVP. Why does Kawhi care? Why does he give a you-know-what about playing Giannis? Kawhi's proven more than enough on multiple occasions, a multi-time champion. Why does he need to go head up against this kid? And if I'm the Clippers, I'm sitting there saying, if Kawhi's going to be responsible for checking Giannis, man, his workload is going to be much higher than if he plays Portland the next day.
Well, and Kawhi checked Giannis just fine in the final four games of the Eastern Conference Final last year.
What so there, to prove?
There's nothing to prove. The pushback, and I'm pro player on this. This is what works for Kawhi Leonard. We can have this conversation across all of the big four sports. Do they play too many games? Well, owners aren't going to do a give back on that because in the NBA, in the NHL, you want the 41 regular season home dates. In Major League Baseball, you want the 81 regular season home dates. And so the way that you manage your stars is you make sure that they're getting appropriate time off. Sports science, analytical data, different teams employ people who are specialized in these areas, and this is what they come up with. Kawhi, with his injury history, is unique. The flip side of the coin is the NBA might say, we used to start our regular season around Halloween, first week of November. We've bumped that up now to the middle of October so that we eliminate, and they have done this completely, eliminate four games in five nights. Remember the Raptors would go out west?
And just come back dead.
They like bounce from Salt Lake City, your favorite place, to Denver, to Los Angeles, up to Sacramento, and play four games in five nights with all this crazy travel. That's out of the way now. Threes and fours still exist, but there are fewer of them than there used to be.
If you want to stop players taking these load management games off, why don't you just start taking salary away from them when they want to miss a game, when they're not injured?
Well, how would you do that?
Would you prove they're not injured?
Well, if a guy will pay a player per game, don't pay him when he wants to take a day off.
Well, that is the worst kind of capitalism, Ziggy. I mean, the NFL has a ton of issues surrounding the fact that its contracts are not guaranteed. You as a former athlete cannot sit here and advocate for non-guaranteed contracts.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you want to stop, I'm curious to see how many players would take a load management day if they had that game taken off their contract.
You know what would happen, though? The problem with that is that any superstar who makes so much money anyway, it's not going to make a difference because they make so much money outside of the arena in sponsorships anyway. It's going to be a drop in the bucket. It's going to be like if someone said, Ashley, if you don't do the show today, you got to give us $5. Like, all right, see ya. Okay, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, what's $5? It's all relative, right? So, okay, they don't get paid for that game, but they have a shoe endorsement, and Nike, Adidas, Puma, Under Armour is actually paying them $200,000 for that day because they did an appearance somewhere. All right, I'm fine with that. And what happens is if someone who's a good player who needs a load management day but aren't in the upper echelon of pay scale, well, how is that fair? They're the ones that need that money. So what, they have to play through something because they're not going to get paid if they need to be load managed?
Yeah, well, it's not everybody, right? These load management days, the issue right now is with the stars. And if you went to them and said, if you want to take your load, if you want to take games off, it comes off your salary, it would stop that day because no star is going to take a game off if he is going to lose salary.
But I'm saying, what if someone has a breakout and they're the star and they're on the rookie deal, Trae Young, and he wants a load management day? That's going to hurt him more than it hurts a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James or a Pascal Siakam. I'm saying there's not parity in that theory.
Well, it wouldn't be a set number. It would be a percentage. So whatever your salary is over this course of a season, when you take those days off, it comes out. I'm telling you right now, not one single player would take a game off. It just would not happen.
I think you're wrong because I think that there's players in this league that would be indignant about that. And I think they'd be like, yeah, go ahead then. Take my salary, because they're willing to not let a precedent be set for other players that come behind them.
And this is a sheer hypothetical, but there would absolutely be a labor fight over that in the next collective bargaining agreement. This is Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ashley, you were down at Scotiabank Arena last night for Raps and Kings, and if you took a shot every time Pascal fouled last night, you would have had to go to the bar after the game to get feeling good.
If I took a shot for every foul Pascal Siakam committed, I would be more sober than I am right now. Wait, what?
Oh, is that why I got the text for the coffee at 10 after 5? Ow, my brain.
Carry the 1 plus 4. That doesn't add up. Congratulations, Pascal. Challenge accepted. Message received. However, there was a little bit of a theory swirling around at the arena and on Twitter that he was kind of flat until he got his first foul. Then he really picked it up. So there is a balancing act, and we know it's never going to be so cut and dry. Some games, you're just naturally going to be more engaged in from the jump. Some days you're going to be playing people that offer a trickier matchup. If we're being completely frank, it's the Kings who stayed in this one. They're a feisty team. They have some good young talent, but Toronto is superior in almost every way. So Pascal Siakam with a great night. And honestly, him and OG Anunoby, the thing that impresses me most about these young players is not when they score career-high points, not when they get career-high assists in OG's case last night. Congratulations to him. It's when they do it in an efficient manner. When they're putting up good shots, when they're taking the looks that are there, when they're not forcing things. The Toronto Raptors were spectacular last night in terms of sharing the ball. They looked like the Golden State Warriors in terms of the way we applauded the Warriors for being unselfish, moving the ball, forcing the defense to set, reset, find a good shot on the reversal. It really was a really nice sight.
Well, they got into their groove pretty quickly. I think the first 2 or 3 minutes, Ashley, they looked like a team that hadn't played in 3 or 4 nights. And then what, they hit 14 consecutive from the field, which I think is the most consecutive that have been hit in season so far this year by any team.
They went off, Scotty.
They went off.
That's what the kids say.
Is that what the kids say? See, I'm not allowed to use kids' lingo anymore, though. There's a 4 that starts your age, you're not allowed, unless there's no number after it, you're not allowed to talk like the kids talk.
Oh, is that the rule?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but, well, I'm...
Good thing I'm only 24.
Am I adulting?
I have some time.
Yeah, you've got 16 years. You got 15 years till you're 39, and then you can't.
No, it was a thing of beauty. And shout out to Kyle Lowry. This guy's going to be an all-star again this year. There was so much doubt surrounding him, and I don't think people necessarily had a problem with the extension, the money, short-term, big number. But he's really proving that age ain't nothing but a number, Scotty. So So don't worry about being 4-0.
I don't care about being 40. It's the fact that when I roll out of bed in the morning and my lower back is just aching, that's the trouble.
That's the problem.
Jeez.
No, it was really nice to see from the Toronto Raptors. And honestly, shout out to the Canadian content in the building as well. I did a pregame report for Eric Smith and his Raptors pregame show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. There was a time when you had to squint with bifocals on to really notice a Canadian in the NBA. Right? Things slowly started. Leo Routens was in the cut early on. Jay Triano was in. Those are for the OG basketball
like
fans.
Bill Wennington on those Bulls teams.
Yeah.
Well, we got a Canadian winning all the titles.
But then it was Steve Nash.
Steve Nash,
for a lot of people, that was the jump-off point. And then you have Tristan Thompson. You're like, okay, something's going on here. Then you have Anthony Bennett. Say what you want about him. First overall draft pick in the NBA. No one else can say that listening right now, I bet. Andrew Wiggins. First overall pick in the draft. So things really started to move. So Corey Joseph back in town. He's a 2011 NBA first rounder. He's an NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. He's a former Raptor. And then maybe under the radar for those who aren't real like basketball heads is Roy Rana, ex-coach of the Ryerson Rams, who was spectacular, old coach of Eastern Commerce High School, really a mecca of basketball in the GTA. If you were kind of in touch or a basketball fan or had kids that played the sport, Eastern Commerce men's program was really the pinnacle, and Roy had a lot, if not most, to do with that. So he took his rookie spin as an assistant coach in the NBA for the Sacramento Kings. So it was really nice to see those homegrown guys getting their shine.
All right, baseball. We're talking about it.
No, thank you.
Oh.
Vito.
Oh, there's a... Speaking of Canadian content...
Oh, yeah, baby.
A Canadian said words. And Tony Clark, the head of the Major League Baseball Players Association, the union, and a word that's not used enough, took umbrage. So there is a brewing war here. There is a brewing labor war between baseball and its union. The collective bargaining agreement expires after the 2021 season, and for the first time since the players' strike of 1994, I think that there is a realistic possibility that games will be missed in the 2022 season. I think that this is where it's going. So to set it up, Alex Anthopoulos was on a conference call with, predominantly Atlanta Braves beat reporters to discuss the re-signings of Tyler Flowers, a catcher, and Nick Markakis, a veteran outfielder that any Blue Jays fan may remember as a former Baltimore Oriole. And Anthopoulos, to paraphrase, effectively said, hey, look, we have done a lot of our due diligence now that the free agency period is opening up. Washington and Houston, yeah, they were in the World Series, but we've caught up with them, and we've now had an opportunity to pretty much speak to every team about what their plans are for their roster this offseason heading into 2020. Trades, free agency, etc. Tony Clark, the head of the union, and the union has some significant frustrations, which we can delve into here just a bit, but he jumps on that and says, uh-huh. Alex Anthopoulos has acknowledged publicly what we have believed or known to be going on privately for years. General managers are communicating about their team's respective free agency plans. We have the C word, collusion, just to clarify what the C word is, collusion. And I read Anthopoulos' comments. I thought they were relatively innocuous, but maybe that's because I covered Alex Anthopoulos and I know the type of work he puts in on background. I have a general sense. So I read them as innocuous. I think that there's a degree of window dressing with Tony Clark's memo, his statement that he put out. But all of that aside, this is reflective of the relationship right now between Major League Baseball owners and Major League Baseball players. And for the first time in more than a quarter century, if it doesn't get resolved, I think we're going to we're going to miss games.
Well, I'm sure players are calling their agents. They're calling the union. You can't be happy when you hear the teams are talking to each other. Because now when you're a player who's 30, 31, you're going to be, you're now's the time you're thinking of, I'm not getting this money in later on in my career because these GMs are talking.
Well, I think it's the older 30, 31, 32 crowd faces the same challenges that that crowd in any other sport does, which is that sports science and analytics data tells us all that suddenly your body starts falling apart at 30. For me, it was 40, but for apparently most of the rest of the planet, it happens 10 years earlier at 30.
Well, you're taking on a significantly less workload than a professional athlete, I would surmise. I don't want to go about assuming.
Have you seen his workouts? I've gone by the second floor sometimes. He's in there. There's steam coming out of that room.
Yeah, it's a steam room. Eucalyptus, yeah. Obviously.
I mean, it's like a sauna.
It's almost like a sauna. It's, if you're looking for something, you're going to find it.
Yes.
So when Tony Clark comes out guns blazing to best represent Major League Baseball players as he sees fit, he's drawing a line in the sand, and he was just waiting for an opportunity. To me, this reeks of him double dutching. And for those who aren't familiar of double dutch, two jump ropes going alternating directions, and you have to kind of time it to get in the middle or everything falls apart. And so Tony Clark seemed to me that he's double dutching. They've been investigating this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And he heard this and he's like, boom, this is my opportunity to at least reignite the conversation based on what was said, because those words can be painted in other directions. In the Jeff Passan article, there was another executive that was spoken to. His name was off the record, though. But he made sure to point out that this is information gathering, not necessarily information banking, which was an issue back in the 80s where Major League Baseball had to pay almost $300 million to players because they were able to prove that collusion was in fact happening. So he made the distinction, information gathering, information banking. And it might seem like semantics, but Tony Clark's accusation is based on semantics anyway. It's based on nitpicking a few words that Alex Anthopoulos put out there and inferring that this is what he's referring to. You have to understand, and you can probably vouch for this much more than myself or Ziggy can, that all of these guys are friends, acquaintances, they know each other. The term old boys club, it's in hockey too, it's not there by accident. It's because all of these old guys have kicked tires together, whether it's been in the minors, whether it's been in the majors, while they've been in the same front offices, while they've been on the same coaching staff. There's a lot of familiarity. So to assume and expect that I'm going to have a conversation with you, Scott, and we know each other, and all we're going to talk about is what's coming up on the show on Friday and nothing else is going to get discussed, it's naive, it's stupid, and I don't think that you can expect that to happen.
Well, here's what happened in the last collective bargaining agreement negotiation. Tony Clark got his ass handed to him. And if he is to remain as the head of the MLBPA going forward, he cannot have what is left of his ass handed to him in the next negotiation.
The left cheek.
The problem players are experiencing, and I mean, this is a broader conversation that takes far too long, but you have, when you reach the major leagues, you have to have 6 years of major league service time before you're eligible for free agency. Most players do not achieve arbitration eligibility until after 3 full years. So in your first 3 years playing Major League Baseball, you are making the league minimum, which I believe this past year was $575,000 or a little bit more. And that is up to the team, whether they want to give you incremental bumps. Then you start to battle in arbitration if you can't come to a contract arrangement with your team in years 4, 5, and 6, and then you hit free agency eligibility. Unlike hockey, unlike basketball, where you can get drafted and get into the league at 18, in baseball, for every Bryce Harper or Juan Soto who did that, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of players who don't, who go through the minor league system to develop and don't reach the big leagues until 22, 23, 24. Well, last time I checked, 24 plus 6 is 30. a lot of these guys don't hit free agency until 30. And so what ends up happening is in this modern era where sports science and analytics data tells us you're getting old at 30 years old, you're squeezed on the young end because you don't have arbitration rights. You have no rights in your first 3 years and you're paid six figures. And then on the back end, when you hit free agency, unless you're a superstar, you're being told you're too old. And the other thing that happened, and you hear about all these things right after the World Series, the so-called QOs, the qualifying offers. When a player gets tagged, like, for example, Josh Donaldson has been by Atlanta, when a player gets tagged by a qualifying offer, this was a huge loss for Tony Clark in the last CBA negotiation. When a player gets tagged with a QO, qualifying offer, it means that if he signs with another team, that team he signs with coughs up a high draft pick. And teams in this day and age value those draft picks more than they do veteran players who are more likely to break down and who are making big money. And so that restricts and constricts both term and dollar for these guys.
Those salaries that are coming down, they've come down an average.
Not for the Mike Trouts and Bryce Harpers.
But the majority of the guys that are entering 30, 31, those contracts are now lower.
They can't get the 5-, 6-, 7-year contracts that they used to. And Albert Pujols, Prince Fielder have served as cautionary tales that you pay for what's ahead, you don't pay for what's in the rearview mirror. Because Pujols has not been a Hall of Fame player playing for Anaheim. He will get into the Hall of Fame based on tenure and the breadth of his numbers, but it's what he achieved in St. Louis that puts him into the Hall.
Just to put a cap on it, perfect example, Kevin Pillar. You would look at him and you'd be like, wow, he's got to be raking it in. In the 2015-2016 runs that the Blue Jays made, he was making 521 tops.
Right, because the major league minimum at the time was 500K, right? Pre-arbitration eligibility. So squeezed on the young end, squeezed on the old end. Qualifying offers. Tony Clark, he's got big work to do, and maybe he thinks squawking, squeaky wheel, getting the grease. I mean, I get it from a strategy standpoint, but this is a huge, huge testing ground for Tony Clark as the head of the MLBPA. Hugh Burrell and the Six Pack, Mark Shapiro, Paul Coffey later on in the program.
Subscribe to the Lead Off Podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. You're listening to JP Weiser's Lead Off with Ashley, Siggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now let's crack open the six pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Well, just like the Leafs did, the Raptors won ugly over the Kings. Sacramento cut a 14-point lead down to 3, but then Captain Kyle turned it up.
Bogdanović up fake, put it on the floor, now kicks over to Dedmon, wide open 3. Rattled a couple of rims and missed. Raptors dodged that one, could have cut their lead to 4. Again, they fought back the Kings. Wow, a deep one! He shot that thing from Burlington and buried it. Kyle Lowry with the west side triple going 2-for-1. And he nailed it to push the lead to 10.
124-120, Raptors the final. Pascal Siakam had only one foul. It's good. Raptors are 5-2, head out on the road for 5. Beginning tomorrow night in New Orleans. Reflections on last night's game.
Pascal only with the one foul.
The one.
OG Anunoby continues to take that step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle Lowry was getting it done. I mean, the Kings, they hung around. That was the one.
The
one thing,
the lights
but
out last night, yeah.
You know, when you the one thing is that you're not going to kick the crap out of teams that you think you should kick the crap out of each and every night. Just win the games, and that's what the Raptors did against Sacramento.
Similar to the Pelicans, the problem here is that Pat McCaw now is out for an undisclosed amount of time. A couple of weeks, they'll reevaluate. They took a mass out from behind his knee, so he's down. The Raptors' depth was already exceptionally thin. Coming off the bench, you trust Serge, you trust OG. And then Nick Nurse has made it very clear that a lot of the other guys have a lot of work to do. And when there was an all-bench unit, It looked shaky.
It wasn't great.
Norman Powell as well, not to be disrespectful to NBA champion Norman Powell, but there's a depth problem, and you can't win anything playing seven guys the entire season.
Well, and to piggyback on Ashley's point, 4-6 on the road coming up. Like, you got 4 games in 6 nights. The schedule picks up here with some travel. Nick Nurse is going to have to go to that bench.
Matt Thomas only played 10 minutes, but he did put up, what, 8 points, 9 points? So, yeah, wasn't a big impact off the bench, but I did like what he did because, let's be honest, his defensive game hasn't been good, and he was good last night for them.
You're going to see more of him, too, over this next little while.
Two.
All right, well, load management has reared its ugly head again. The Clippers holding out Kawhi Leonard in the first of a back-to-back last night. It's the second straight week Kawhi's missed a nationally televised game. This one was against the Bucks. ESPN basketball reporter Doris Burke is not impressed.
It is mind-boggling to me that Kawhi doesn't want to play against the reigning MVP, and he'd rather play against Portland tomorrow night on TNT.
The Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo says he'd want to be out there as much as possible.
There's going to be times that you're going to take breaks, and I think the NBA gives you like 22 or 21 day offs throughout the season, and that's a great time to take a break. You know, like usually in games like this, what I feel is that, you know, I'm going to go out there and try to do whatever it takes so my team will win.
Bucks won the game 129-124, so Ashley, maybe the Clippers could have used Kawhi last night.
You know what, Giannis? You would know about time off. Because guess what? You got extra time off when you got eliminated by the Raptors in the Eastern Conference Final.
She went there. She actually went there.
Am I lying?
Wow.
Am I lying, though?
No, you're not. You're absolutely on point. But does Doris Burke have a point here? I heard you guys talking earlier about how last year that this wasn't a big deal, and it worked last year. The difference between this year and last year is the Clippers are on national TV a heck of a lot more than the Raptors were last season. And that's not nothing. I mean, our business is driven by ratings, mm-hmm. especially television. People want to tune in. They want to see the stars play.
So two things. Kawhi sat out a national game when the Golden State Warriors were in town last year. People were mad, but at the end of the day, there's enough stars on the court to carry it. Second of all, people don't care about the Clippers. They really, really don't. I was on writer's block this week, I guess. Gosh, it feels like 16 months ago. And the upper bowl tickets for a Lakers game, $80 to $90. The exact same ticket for a Clippers game, $13. Clippers don't matter as much as we think they do. We only care because our ex-star is there.
Well, no, but I think ESPN cares, and they've positioned Kawhi Leonard as one of these stars, one of the showcase stars of this league. And so, yeah, they're a little cranky that he's not. It's second straight week he's missed a national game.
Well, why is this a surprise to anybody, though, just given how Kawhi was handled and the fact that, as we discussed in the first segment of the show, Greg Popovich was a trailblazer on this load management stuff when Kawhi was there. Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili. It happened with LeBron in Cleveland. Like, this has been going on. I know the NBA has tried to pull back a little bit, give something back, start its regular season 2.5-3 weeks earlier than it used to. But these guys are just trying to get through the regular season to be ready for the playoffs.
I understand that. There's no correct answer for this. All I'm saying is that the NBA does a better job of any of the major leagues in showcasing its stars, and the networks that cover them want the stars to play.
It doesn't happen in hockey, and if I'm a fan going to watch a game and your top player is not playing, I'm going to be upset. What are you going to do? Try to find out who's playing which game? The ticket values are going to change. You try to get a ticket, resale. It's going to change everything. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you this. I know Hugh's on my side. If you take salary away from the players,
here we go,
it will stop them from taking these games off.
But it's hard to do that because Ashley was saying earlier, how do you determine if the player is genuinely hurt or he's just kind of, he's gaming the system.
And as we've learned from football, probably the Washington football team, there's ways you can play the system.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all.
Doesn't matter how they play it. They're going to lose.
I just like how the former athlete on the panel, former pro athlete,
trying to take money away from players,
is all about the non-guaranteed contract.
Heel turn.
I think this probably will be I'm sure it already has been, but I'm sure this will be a discussion in the offices of the NBA before.
Here's what I will say. if your solution is to make the season fewer games, I bet you you will still get load management if
probably.
The season is 72 games.
Yep.
That is not the answer.
Three.
Leafs host the Vegas Golden Knights tonight with Zach Hyman set to return soon. The Leafs will have some very tough lineup decisions to make, and one of those will have to do with veteran center Jason Spezza. Yesterday on Tim and Sid, Leafs coach Mike Babcock addressed the issue.
There's no question that Jason and I have had lots of talks through the process this far. In the end, we'll probably have quite a few more. That's with our group right now, that's the role he's in, and it doesn't make it easy for him. And doesn't make it easy for anybody in that spot, but that's the spot he's in.
So Spezza, days are numbered here?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny the way he scores, gets an assist, then he extends the shootout, and then you're a healthy scratch in a game. That's not good. Was it his strongest game of the year? No. Has he been playing okay for what opportunity he's been given? Yes, but there's a bigger issue here. Hyman comes back. This is going to have to go to a 20-man roster. That brings up a lot of problems. You go on a road trip, what are you going to do? Call a guy up? What happens if a guy gets sick before the game? You're going to go to 5 defense? You're going to go to 11 forwards? It's too tough. We talked about it yesterday.
It'll be 23 with the team, though, at any one time, right?
But if
but under only 20 the, you can dress.
With the salary cap, you're not going to be able to hold that roster of 23 players. And the question now comes is, there's going to have to be a big contract that's going to have to come off this roster. Who's it going to be?
Ooh, stay tuned.
Four.
San Jose Sharks forward Evander Kane is being sued by the Cosmopolitan Casino in Las Vegas, which claims Kane never paid back $500,000 in gambling markers. Kane is alleged to have taken out markers worth between $20,000 and $100,000 on or about April 15th of last year. That would have been between games 3 and 4 against the Golden Knights in the first round of the playoffs. Kane hasn't commented, but we did catch up to Cosmo officials.
It's me. Knock, knock. So, you got my money?
Huh? Oh, yeah, I'll pay you soon.
Yeah, well, here's a suggestion. Have the money by tomorrow and there won't be any problems.
Huh?
Yeah, 24 hours.
Yeah, like I say, Kane hasn't commented on this.
What's he doing? Is he splitting kings? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, don't do that, by the way. Never split tens. Aces and aces, too. Always split aces and aces. But yeah, I mean, we're joking, but this Vegas takes their gambling markers pretty seriously. Someone's going to have to pay some money back here.
I do feel better if I'm Evander Kane that it's in the public consciousness now.
Yeah.
So if anything happens, if my kneecap goes missing, at least there's a track record of where this all began.
Tony
it's
Soprano.
A bit more of a problem if it's being sent on carrier pigeon or weird men in newsboy caps running up on you in the streets.
Five.
Well, it's been a tough season for the Chicago Bears, especially quarterback Mitchell Trubisky, who's only thrown 5 TD passes. Bears have stumbled to a 3-5 record at the halfway point, last in the NFC North. The heat on the second overall pick 3 years ago is being turned up, so Trubisky is turning the TVs down.
Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not. But they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of, people, or what we're going through, or what we're thinking. So, yeah, tunnel vision, earmuffs, and just come to work every day and try to get better and get back to what we know we're capable of doing.
But hang on, Ziggy. I thought that professional athletes never watch TV sports. They never listen to sports shows on the radio. They certainly don't read the sports pages.
Some guys do not, but as you can tell from his comments, it's hard to avoid at times, especially if there's maybe somebody you respect that comments on the team or reports on them. You're always going to kind of keep an eye on what's being said. So yeah, it's hard to block it all out. In bigger markets, it's even tougher. A place like Toronto, we've seen what happens with the Leafs and what's said about them.
Six.
And guys, are you sitting down? Oh, you are actually. Okay. Cheating has rocked the world of esports. Yes. 17-year-old Jarvis K, who plays for esports organization FaZe, recently caught cheating at Fortnite and handed a lifetime ban. Turns out K was using something called aimbots, which make it easier to kill your opponent, apparently. K issued a tearful apology. Guys, get ready for this.
I'm truly, like, so sorry. Epic, I know I have to take accountability for my actions. And, you know, I'm gonna do my best to accept any punishment that, like, comes my way. Whatever happens. I'm not trying to find, like, a quick road out. But, like, being banned forever. I didn't expect this would happen.
What a loser!
Ashley, you want to take this one?
Yeah, probably a lot of people aren't going to like it. Houston Astros, Austin Matthews. Now that's an apology.
Yeah. Wow.
That's an apology.
Yeah. Tearful.
And it is low-hanging fruit to pick on esports nerds. I mean, players and athletes. But, hey, the international tournament in 2019, the payout was over $34 million. The Fortnite World Cup Finals, $15 million payout. It's no joke. This is big business,
wasn't
baby.
Wasn't laughing at esports.
No, just him.
Laughing at the kids' quote-unquote tearful apology. It seemed a little disingenuous.
Well, it's the old thing of like 17 years old, right? This is the biggest thing going in his life right now.
Ten years
from now, he'll look back and be like, okay.
Yeah, I could have tuned it or toned it down a little bit. By the way, that kid makes about $8,000 a week from his YouTube videos. So,
how old is he?
Yeah, he's 17. He's too young for
single? No.
I'm just assuming, yeah.
Mama.
Gotta go.
There is a game tonight in the NFL, Raiders and Chargers, and it's big. In fact, I'm going to make a declaration on this game tonight, and I'll do it next.
Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Well, Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make sharp game day picks, whether you want to get in on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between. Go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
JP Weiser's leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So if you've been listening to leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack the last 5-6 weeks since we launched, you know that I made a stupid comment on this radio station. Not the first that I've made, not the last that I will. Made a stupid comment around the start of September before the NFL season started, where with Ziggy as my co-host, I just blurted out, if the Oakland Raiders make the playoffs, I will cut and dye my hair like Raiders owner Mark Davis and wear it for a week. If you don't know what Mark Davis looks like or what his haircut looks like, just Google it. I didn't think the Raiders would be 4-4 at this point in the season. If the Raiders miss the playoffs, Ziggy has to do the male pattern baldness deal and shave his head on top and go with
the cul-de-sac,
the side hair bald on top. Tonight's game, AFC West matchup, Oakland Coliseum, the 4-5 Los Angeles Chargers, who sucked earlier this season but have started to bounce back, including smoking Green Bay at home in L.A. on Sunday, are into Oakland to take on the Raiders, who are 4-4. Neither of these teams would make the playoffs if the playoffs started today. Buffalo, Indianapolis would be the wild card teams. The Pittsburgh Steelers are also 4-4, so it's a bit of a jumbled mess. But here is my declaration. Tonight's game tells all. If Los Angeles beats Oakland, I'm safe. If Oakland beats LA, I'm in trouble. Why? The Raiders' remaining schedule includes home dates with Cincinnati, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, and road games at the New York Jets and the Denver Broncos. If Oakland wins tonight, there is a path to 10 wins for John Gruden's Raiders. If Oakland wins tonight, I will be mortified.
This all just started with Oakland making the playoffs, and I said, I would ride my bike to work, but since I now move across the street, it went to a cul-de-sac. And then how did your hair come into this equation?
I was the one who initially made the bet.
I originally said I would ride my bike to work if they didn't win, and you said you would cut his hair that way. But now I'm getting stuck with the cul-de-sac. So,
well, you better hope that Philip Rivers has got some magic left in him. Listen, he's been successful at the Coliseum. He's played there 13 times. He's won 9 games. Matter of fact, there's only a handful of Raiders players that have played more games at home than Philip Rivers has in their own stadium. The Chargers did have a bounce back, and the Raiders have had some really exceptional rookie play so far this season, but are rookies dependable? Let's see.
I have never been a bigger Chargers fan than I am tonight. Check out my social media at Scotty Mac Thinks on Instagram for the Insta story to see what I look like with a Mark Davis haircut. The bet is on, and it culminates, at least that's my argument, tonight. Paul Coffey in studio for the 8 o'clock hour. Blue Jays president and CEO Mark Shapiro at 7:30.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Siggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I mean, we are beautiful people, so why not?
At this time of the morning,
what's going on outside? The snow?
Oh, I looked outside the studio.
Oh, like literally outside. Not what's going on behind us.
Because
there's
the guys
windows
in the
here?
Control room have the curtains down, the lights dim. It's like a Marilyn Manson concert, I would imagine, without as much debauchery. Some, but not as much. I would say no. What did he do? He like either bit the puppy or the bat. I can't remember. Sorry. Good morning, everybody. 7:05 a.m.
Well, Ozzy Osbourne.
0 degrees outside.
Didn't Ozzy Osbourne?
Oh, Ozzy was the bat.
Yeah.
Marilyn Manson was the puppies. He did some. I think he threw them into the crowd. Hopefully, they got adopted.
Yeah.
Foster.
I hadn't heard about that one. Jeez. Yeah,
7:06 a.m. 0 degrees outside.
No, and it's snowing like quite literally. Which you know, I sit here. Every month of the year has a comment you make about the weather.
Okay.
So January, it's like, oh, it's so cold, but the days are getting longer.
Okay.
February's, man, this weather sucks and I'm fed up with winter, but at least it's the shortest month of the year and we're getting to March, the month where spring starts soon. And then in March, it's, well, it's spring, but it's still really cold out. And then April, it's like, geez, you know, it rains every day. And then May, it's totally dependent on, like, how May is going. It's going to get warm sometime soon.
The hope blossoms.
Why is it still, like, late March out here? Or if it's really nice in early May, you're like, oh, we're going to have a long summer.
Fire up the patio beers.
And then June, July, and August are typically
good. No, then ungrateful Torontonians are like June, July, and August, like, it's so hot.
Yeah.
I'm sweating in my belly crease. I can't even sit down in a gray shirt outside.
It's so damn hot.
5 minutes. Ah.
And what's the common theme? We're never happy in Toronto with our weather.
Well,
ever.
I am.
It's like people are complaining about our winters. And then all of a sudden, it's nice outside in the summertime, and they're like, oh, gosh, it's just so hot. It's just constantly back and forth.
Oh, but then September rolls around. It's like, hey, have you noticed that the days, I mean, they're just really getting a whole lot shorter.
Well,
it never has happened in September before.
Well, someone said yesterday, you know, we did fall back, daylight savings or whatnot, and all of a sudden, it doesn't get dark at 6, it gets dark at noon. Like, I don't know how that math works. Yeah, it was 1 hour, but it actually feels like 6 hours. Here's the solution to this. You just need different looks. You need to get galoshes. You need to get a fun umbrella. You need to get a pea coat. And then you can get excited to go outside and kind of show off your fashion sense while everyone is drowning in misery.
Why do we change the clocks? You don't like it. You feel awful when we went.
I have taken great pains to ward that off this year. Yeah, I'm like taking a lot of vitamin D. I'm trying to be active and stuff to ward it off, but it affects me. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the time change at all. And aren't like a lot of provinces and some state. I mean, I lived in Arizona. They don't touch the clocks.
Saskatchewan doesn't touch the clocks either.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. Why move the hour?
There you go. Run for prime minister or something. And
I should run for my ward for counselor.
Okay. What's the context for that? Was this a declaration?
Are you now running? A political or do you have too many skeletons in your closet where you're right like, now? Maybe that's not a thing that's going to happen?
I hear the spot might be open. So. Okay.
Well, you live across the street, so if there's something we haven't been made aware of.
All right. My ward in Agent Court Scarborough, apparently the spot is open now. So
I see. Okay. Well, that helps us. I don't live.
This is Tofu Guy, right?
Yeah, I don't.
And that has been your 590 news update. Yeah.
So we've established it's snowing. We are extremely predictable in the ways we complain about the weather each and every month of the year. And Mike Zygmunis wants to run for city council in Agent Court Scarborough. Congratulations. Look for the street signs in 3 years. Leafs, they play tonight. The Vegas Golden Knights come into town, so this is game two of this week-long homestand before the Leafs finally take a roadie. Yeah. We're like losing all of our teams at the same time. Was the carnival or the circus coming in?
Check Scotiabank for what concerts are in town.
I got you. The Raptors are going on a six-game trip. The Leafs are going to be gone for most of the next. I think they play 13 of 16 on the road after the Flyers come in on Saturday night. So the Vegas Golden Knights. Mike Babcock was on Tim and Sid yesterday afternoon, and we were trying yesterday morning to figure out just what the heck's going to happen here when Zach Hyman comes back. Here's what Babcock had to say about Jason Spezza's role with the Toronto Maple Leafs as it stands right now.
We sat down and went through all these scenarios prior to ever him coming here. There's no question that Jason and I have had lots of talks through the process this far. In the end, we'll probably have quite a few more. That's with our group right now, that's the role he's in, and it doesn't make it easy for him and doesn't make it easy for anybody in that spot, but that's the spot he's in.
So he's effectively fourth line center, maybe some second power play time, gets a shot on the PK every now and then, but this team has a cap and therefore roster crunch when Zach Hyman returns. And could it be simply Hyman back, Spezza on the outs?
And what are you going to do? Send him to the Marlies and call him back up when you need a player? This guy's at the end of his career. Did they not try to get him to sign in Toronto? And a guy that has done what he's done, you want to come in and you want to be a big part of this team, even if it is on the fourth line and the second unit power play. You can't have this guy in and out of the lineup. He hasn't come out and said anything wrong, and he's been the good guy in the room. But at the end of the day, you can't have him sitting out in and out of the lineup.
From being a healthy scratch on opening night, we knew that there was a bit of a disagreement, at least in my opinion, in the philosophy of how Jason Spezza was supposed to be used here with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I believe that Kyle Dubas wants him in the lineup, and I feel as though there's a difference of opinion in terms of what Mike Babcock thinks he can bring to the table and how he should use him. I don't believe that Jason Spezza is happy with the situation, even if he does in some way understand it. But when he goes out and, as you said, has a great night, scores, extends the penalty shootout, and then is scratched the next day, that doesn't seem like equal opportunity treatment with what we've seen with some of these guys. I would be much more appreciative if Babcock, who has no problem sometimes being honest and harsh in the media, came out and said something to the extent of, Jason Spezza has had a great career. For me, as the head coach of this team, I dictate who gets to play what minutes, and I want to give some of these younger kids more run than him, and that's why they're going to get preferential treatment. And it would be a firestorm, and it would be a disaster. But there's also something to be said for saying, I see why Kyle brought him aboard, but we have different philosophies in how to utilize him and how to execute these lineups. Boom. It's clear to me that this is what's happening.
Yeah, I didn't like the opening night scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're...
Well, it started off the wrong... It just...
I felt like, look, they had the second game of the season in Columbus. They were back home the next night for their third game. So it was a 3-4 situation. You could have sat him in Columbus. So I didn't like that. But what is Jason Spezza truly expecting when you look at the lineup and you see 1-2, I don't care how you order them, Tavares, Matthews. Matthews, Tavares. Kerfoot's been a nice player for this team.
Been great. That third line, Mikheyev, Kapanen, they've been great.
They can fly. Mikheyev has shown finish. Kerfoot, like I said, great skater. Like, there are three players ahead of Jason Spezza, at least, on the depth chart up the middle.
And I'm sure when they talked about coming to the team, there was mention that, hey, you're going to be a fourth liner. You're going to play into the lineup when we have an injury, and you're going to get some second unit power play time. So he must have known that. Did he know he was going to be not starting the season at home, kid from the city? Even if, and the notion is that, oh, Jason Spezza hasn't been playing well, and now he's out of the lineup. And how about all the people that were complaining that he didn't start the first game? From a player standpoint, when you don't start that first game, you're at the end of your career, you've had a great career, and you get scratched. You haven't even played a game yet. I don't care what you've done in training camp. I don't care how bad it was. You can't get scratched in the first one. I know we talked about that a lot when the season started, but that just started things on the wrong foot.
My concern, though, is that this is a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. Morgan Rielly is not 100%. That has been a difficult pairing with Cody Ceci. And Austin Matthews, Tavares has had the injury. He's back. Mitch Marner, William Nylander. I think Matthews' numbers are inarguable. He's scoring the goals that he needs to score. William Nylander is driving play the way that you expect him to. Mitch Marner, especially relative to his contract, has been a disappointment so far this year. Generally speaking, the play without the puck involving all of those guys has been lacking. Those are the key issues for me, right? Play without the puck. And I keep coming back to it. And I don't think the fact that Jason Spezza is kind of in and out of the lineup and what is his role, it matters from a roster machination point of view, from a salary cap point of view with Zach Hyman coming back. But the issues that plague this team aren't sort of the fringe fourth line guys who draw in and come out of the lineup on any given night.
Yeah, but the problem is that it's all about perception, right? And if the organization was completely frank and transparent with Jason Spezza, which I believe that they would have been, saying, listen, this is going to be your role, as we outlined already. You're going to play fourth line minutes. You're going to get a shot on the PK. At least from where I'm sitting, if I'm someone of Jason Spezza's caliber and I've had a career like him, I'm sitting there looking at the roster, looking at all these young guys saying, I bet I can work my way up here. I bet there's an opportunity for me to kind of show out and gain the trust of the coach and move my way strategically, maybe up the lineup or at least into some more minutes. And so I feel as though if there's frustration on his part, that's the only way, if the team was honest with him from the beginning, aside from the opening night stuff, but that's the only way there could be frustration on part, if his expectations based on his past performance and the standard he holds himself to were in play here.
Well, it's insurance for the team, right? If, say, they don't know what they have in Kerfoot, he hasn't played a game here to start the season. If that doesn't work out, you bring in Jason Spezza to play your third line. I know Kerfoot would be an expensive fourth liner, but he gives you that extra option to move up and down the line. What if you don't have Jason Spezza, and like we've seen, Tavares has gone down? Who do you now bring up to that top line? Gauthier's had a great start, but is he a top three centerman in your mind?
No.
So that's the issue, right? What do you do if Kerfoot, Matthews, or Tavares goes down? Who do you put in that center spot? Jason Spezza is the first name that comes to my mind. So he gives you that option where if somebody gets injured, you can throw him in. And for the opportunity that he's been given this year, he's done great. But Mike Babcock has his guys, and it's now become apparent after what happened in training camp and this season so far, he's not one of his guys. There are certain veterans he likes and certain guys he doesn't. And if you don't play a certain way, you're going to be in and out of the lineup. And we've seen that in the past with his players, and we've seen with Jason Spezza.
And, you know, if someone texted in Hammy from Aaron, hi. I never want to hear the words class and Leafs in the same sentence ever again. bring aging local superstar back home to end a marvelous career just to embarrass and humiliate him? Why get him in the first place? Classless move. Thank you for your text message. So I would say that if people are bothered or perturbed by that, I totally get it. But Scott, you're right. This is not going to make or break the team if we're looking at a larger scale. Having Jason Spezza there, I understand he is a depth piece, but this is not going to be the driving force between success and failure. And we talked about him at the beginning of the year. We briefly mentioned the fact that he was scratched after he had a good game the other night. But that's not what we talk about. That's not what drives conversation. That's not what drives concern. That's not what we celebrate. So in the grand scheme of things, as rude or as dismissive as this may sound, it's a non-factor at this point, even though it's a talking point, because really and truly, how you feel about Mike Babcock is going to illuminate how you feel about this Spezza situation. I think it's more about Babcock than Jason Spezza.
Is he coaching to the strengths of this team?
Well, that's, you're going to question the coach at every turn of the season. Are the top guys playing enough? Do the young guys get a chance? Are the minutes distributed? Who's playing the power play? Who deserves what? Which guys from the minors are you bringing up? Are you hard enough? Have you lost the room? These are questions we're going to ask all year. Has Mike Babcock lost the room? No. He's still a guy for the job. He still has control. A lot of the stuff he does, I like, and he makes the decisions. Listen, he's been around the game a long time.
Is this team capable of playing however it is you need to play to be successful in a deep playoff run?
Do they need to be engaged more on most nights? How can you say they can't? They shouldn't be. Of course they should be. Do they need to be more physical? They're not going to go out and get it. There's no magical player you can bring in right now to make this team more physical. I just don't know who you're going to go and get. It's going to have, like Mike Babcock, it's going to have to come from within. The players are going to have to change the way they play. And I know if you're a scorer, you're not going to just become tough overnight. I get that part of it. But your game's going to have to change. And then a whole other thing is that there is kind of two seasons. You have your regular season and your playoffs, and the best players can play well in both and can adjust their game. You got to understand, the season, it's a marathon, right? It's not a sprint. You're going to have games where you're not 100%, and you're going to have to find a way to get things done when you don't feel good. Obviously, guys don't play as well as they can. You're going to have an off night, and then all of a sudden the playoffs come, and it's just a totally different game. It's more physical. You're playing every other night. It takes a different player in the playoffs. And a guy I keep going back to is a Sidney Crosby. If the playoffs started tomorrow, who would you want on your team? Do you want McDavid? Do you want Matthews? Do you want a Crosby? Do you want a Stamkos? Who's your player if the playoffs started tomorrow?
Geez, I'd take a Crosby. I'd take
all of them.
A McKinnon.
McKinnon and Crosby. Those are my two that jump off the page.
I mean, look at the way Drysdale's playing this year, too. I mean, that's the way things are going right now. Leon Drysdale has to be in that conversation.
I have to see more playoffs.
They got to get there, obviously.
Yeah, I have to see more out of them. But those are the two guys that come, right? They play well during there's two different seasons. You have your regular season and your postseason. And the best players, the guys that they can do both well. And that's just one of the things they have to find. And it's going to come with experience. It's still early. Some guys find it. I know everyone says, well, Ovechkin found it at 30. How about Kane and Taze in Chicago? They found it in their early, mid-20s. Some guys are going to find it at different times. And that's just the situation right now in Toronto. They haven't found it yet. And back to your question about Mike Babcock and how can he get these guys to play that way? The players have to change. When you're a coach, you're not going to beat it into your players to change the way. What, take less penalties? And what are you going to do? You can bag skate them in practice, go line to line every penalty you take. That's usually doesn't work most of the time. And it's a broken record. Guys, you need to play harder. You're not going to get players to play harder. It's the guys in the room, they have to actually go out and do it. And that's the problem, is that we can sit here and talk about all day, and Mike Babcock can sit in the room and yell at them in practice, and guys, we need more. But at the end of the day, the leadership has to start, and it has to start at the top. It's not going to be your fourth liners to get that started.
Are they a great team, or are they a team full of great upper-end players? That's a key question that this Maple Leafs group will answer over the course of the season. Paul Coffey will join us in studio for the 8 o'clock hour. Up next, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, on the state of his team as baseball's free agency season kicks off. OddsShark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? OddsShark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. Whether you want to get in on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between, go to OddsShark.net. This is not a gambling site.
JP Weiser's lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hockey Hall of Famer Paul Coffey in studio with us for the entirety of the 8 o'clock hour. In this segment, brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora, we are pleased to have join us the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro. This is a free agency season, kicks into high gear. Mark, you wake up this morning and you see the snow outside, and then you're like, oh, yeah, well, I worked in Cleveland for 25 years. It's just another November morning in these parts.
Yeah, I live in the snow belt in Cleveland, so, yeah, cleaning snow off the car is kind of a rite of the off season, and it's still, even with the snow, I think there's a sign down here. We're inside of 120 days to the first spring training game, so it's hard to imagine.
Well, and with that in mind, I should ask you, how's it looking down in Dunedin? Where are you at with the stadium renovations and the renovations to the Matic complex?
Yeah, it's hard to even believe. I actually got some pictures from Shelby Nelson, our Florida ops head yesterday, and there's the coolest thing to see from yesterday is that there's green on the field at the Major League Stadium, so they're actually putting down the sod right now. The stadium is well underway to kind of being a renovated, redesigned, and what will feel like a new ballpark when we get down there. The player development complex, there were some great aerial shots from a drone yesterday that were just incredible. So the building will be not ready to be occupied until later in the summer, but all of the outbuildings, 3.5 new fields, a turf field, 2 sets of new batting tunnels, maybe one of the coolest things, a covered major league turfed infield, which will give us the ability to kind of do a full workouts, whether it's raining or even when it's really hot with the sun, and provide some shade. So a lot will be done. We'll be able to show everybody and take, hopefully, Scott, you'll get down there, take you on a tour when you get down there for spring training. But it's rapidly going, and it's a massive project. And most importantly, I think it's going to be a major game changer for us as an organization in helping us be more effective at developing and building a winning team.
With Mark Shapiro, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, this is Leadoff on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Mark, I'm sure you're aware that former Blue Jays general manager, now Atlanta general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, made some comments on a conference call with Atlanta beat reporters yesterday that the head of the players union, Tony Clark, interpreted as evidence of collusion, and he issued a press release off of that. I'm not going to ask you to comment specifically on what Alex had to say or Tony's response, but I do know that you are well plugged in with the league, and so I'm hoping you can give us this. How would you describe at this moment the relationship between the league, i.e. the owners, and the players?
Well, I mean, I think it's somewhat natural leading up to a collective bargaining negotiation. It very rarely is kind of all roses and birthday cakes and kumbaya when you head towards a negotiation where both sides, or particularly one, wants to change the circumstances. What I always hope, and what I think I, rely on after kind of looking through a windshield of 30 years and only one work stoppage, is that, the owners and the players both recognize that the game is great, the game is bigger than anybody else, that it really is all about our fans, and that there is a large pie out there, and thinking about how we divide it needs to be done carefully, needs to be done respectfully, and needs to be done with the interest of you know, both stakeholders at part, but that, you know, the game is so good and so resilient, and the fans are such an essential part of that game being successful, that will ultimately prevail in the end.
Is there a way to properly address players' concerns here, Mark, in a shifting environment where you've got 6 years of club control, major league service time required over any player before he becomes eligible for free agency, 3 years typically of club control before he even becomes arbitration eligible. So players don't get paid on the young end. And then with the advances we've seen, quite rightly, in sports science and analytical data telling us that peak performance occurs in the 20s, is there a way to ensure that players get appropriately paid through their 20s? Because those deals when they're 29 and 30 and hitting free agency eligibility for the first time typically aren't there like they used to be if they're not a top tier star.
Yeah, I think you did a pretty good job of just kind of giving the elevator pitch to the current circumstance, which is, you know, nothing has happened except for we've gathered more information, we've made more informed decisions as an industry, and as a result, you know, the emphasis is probably being placed on not investing in players as they become riskier and have more declining performance. And so ultimately now we approach a juncture in a CBA where there's an opportunity to correct and address, you know, the structure in the system. That would probably be done with an ask in some other areas, ultimately maybe some areas that are hopefully in the best interest of the fans and thinking about helping the game evolve, much like basketball and football have done and hockey have done, to ensure that, as you know, the fan base and, you know, media habits and the way people watch and want to be entertained, that our sports, never violating the tradition and purity of the sport, continue to evolve, you know, with the set of rules. So I think there'll be some give and take. That's what a collective bargaining agreement negotiation is. And, you know, you aptly stated probably the number one concern from a player perspective.
With Mark Shapiro, he is the president and CEO of the Blue Jays. This is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Mark, looking towards the 2020 iteration of our Toronto Blue Jays, there's under $40 million committed to payroll as of now. So I need to know, what's your best offer for Gerrit Cole going to be?
Ashley, I think you need to give us a little proposal there. So we're going to be one of many people interested in recognizing he's certainly a very rare talent to be available in free agency. And last time we kind of tried to guess what the free agent landscape's going to look like, there's almost every team out there is looking for starting pitching, which is not surprising. And certainly every team could use a number one starter. So, we're going to have to be aggressive on every level of the free agent starting pitcher landscape and recognize that, you know, players do, as they go into a situation, they have all of the things that are important to them. They look at geography. They look at how that aligns with their personal situation, their family. They look at spring training and where that, you know, location is. Right. They look at competitiveness of team. They look at, you know, division and the landscape that they would play in. So, you know, it takes an alignment of interests as well as dollars. I think dollars are not going to be our challenge, Ashley, which hasn't always been the case. It's going to be, you know, where do we fit with Garrett's alignment of interest and how does that align? And same thing with every free agent we pursue. What I'm confident is that throughout the free agency process, we'll be able to get better this winter and we'll have the resources to do it. And who we align with from this winter and in the next two or three winters, as it gets even more crucial, is just going to continue to grow.
Just make sure you send me the proposal before you shoot it over to Garrett and his people, and I'll be sure to give you my opinion. But you guys have already...
I'll pass it off.
You guys have... You can give it to my people. Scotty Mack will take care of it for me. You guys made a move. You acquired Chase Anderson, of course, a right-handed pitcher. Obviously, one of the biggest holes in the lineup last year was the starting rotation. But when you talk about long-term viability and long-term success, I'm curious as to your thoughts whether you find the odds of drafting and developing a position player at a higher success rate than drafting and developing a pitcher?
Well, they are. I mean, just statistically, the facts, I think the pitching landscape is so fraught with the risk of injury that no matter how much information, no matter how we advance, the motion and the stress of pitching just runs counter to the human body. And it just, you know, we never know exactly how long guys are going to be able to withstand those loads. That's why a guy who's a horse, like you mentioned, Gerrit Cole, is such a rare, you know, a rare guy to be available through free agency. But you still kind of bite your tongue. You're still so nervous because pitching is, you know, such a risky game. And I think we always like to develop our own pitching because if you look at the history of free agent pitching contracts, you know, it is a really, really, really high-risk area to play in. It's the certainty with both drafting, developing position players and signing them free agency is much more of a known. Some of that's because, you know, we have 600 plate appearances to look at a position player on each year, and, you know, only 30 starts or 200 innings if a guy's a starter. So we just have less information, and some of that's because the risks of pitching are much higher than being a position player.
With Mark Shapiro, president of the Blue Jays, two rapid-fire ones for you, Mark, before we let you go. Number one, saw a clip on Twitter of Vladdy jumping rope last week. The kid looks svelte. How's his offseason going?
It's going, I'm sorry, it's going great. Ross is down there right now and met with Vladdy, and he was, when I talked to Ross on the phone the other night, Ross was blown away. He said, you know, he's getting after it, you know, couldn't be pushing himself harder. Now that has to continue through the off season, but I think to set that tone, to approach it on his own in the end, you know, Scotty, every single player has to take ownership over his own career. We can give guys feedback. We can present them with the best information and the best resources, the best coaching, the best facilities, and the best guidance. But a player has to take accountability and ownership of his own career, and he has to make that decision for himself, just like any of us in our own lives. And so to see Vladdy having made that decision that, okay, I've gone through that first major league season, I've seen what it takes to survive the grind up here, I've seen what the best players do, and I need to make that adjustment along with some other adjustments. And I think we all know and recognize that if he does do that, if he takes care of that piece of his business, the other aspects of his baseball playing are going to certainly fall in line and continue to get better, and we're going to have a special player on our hands.
I didn't mean to make you all verklempt about it. I'm just kidding. Last one, Mark. Your situation, can you express with confidence that you will be here long term?
Well, I mean, I don't make those aren't unilateral decisions, but I can express, you know, two things. One, that I've received nothing but positive feedback from the people that I report to about, you know, wanting me to remain here. And I certainly have been consistent from day one that the reasons for coming here were compelling, and that it's been nothing but an affirmation since the day I got here. And in 2016 and 2015, seeing the incredible potential of this franchise, and then waking up every single day, whether there's snow in my windshield or whether it's a beautiful day, with the overwhelming desire to have that possibility and that potential happen every single year, the drive to build that sustainable championship team. I want to finish that job, Scotty, and, you know, I'm not going to rest until I do, and I want to see that happen here because I know just how unique and how special in every way it can be to do that for Toronto and do that for all of Canada.
Thank you for this, Mark. All the best this offseason, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Mark Shapiro is the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, and his proposal for Gerrit Cole will be on Ashley's desk.
Monday morning.
Well, I think 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon.
No, we need some time. I don't want him to rush it together. I want a nice deck. I would like pictures. I would like charts, graphics. I want pie and bar graphs.
Apple pie?
No, I actually don't like pie. That's a conversation. I don't want to get into
Okay, we'll have a discussion at some point about Ashley's distaste for pie. Paul Coffey in studio for the entire 8 o'clock hour. Coming up next, the phone lines are open, 416-870-0590. We'll play Rock and Talk to get you into the draw to win Leafs tickets. See them host the Flyers on Saturday.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Leadoff presents Rock and Talk.
Right, Ashley, with the lyrics today, this is for your opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see the Hyundai James Naismith Classic College Basketball Showcase presented by Citi on November the 16th. And you'll get into the draw, which we will make at about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night. A pair of tickets for that. Here is this morning's Rock and Talk.
I'll never miss a beat. I am lightning on my feet. And that's what they don't see. That's what they don't see. I'm dancing on my own. I'll make the moves up as I go. And that's what they don't know. It's what they don't know. But I keep cruising. Can't stop, won't stop grooving. It's like I got this music in my mind.
It sounds like one of my newscasts from radio school in college. I like it. Ian in Toronto, you're our leadoff hitter. Can you, I lost my words there. Do you have a guess?
Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. 'Cause the players gonna play, and the haters gonna
hate. Ian knew.
The song's a hit. Listen, Taylor Swift can be polarizing, but you cannot deny that you know the words to her songs.
Well, and Ian in Toronto was not distracted by my inability to find words on the radio. Congratulations, Ian. You're going to the Hyundai James Naismith Classic presented by Citi on November the 16th. And you're into the weekly draw to see the Leafs host the Flyers on Saturday night. We will make that draw for tickets at about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Your last chance to get into the draw will come at 7:50. Tomorrow morning. Paul Coffey, Hockey Hall of Famer, one of the great defensemen in NHL history, will jump into studio for the entire 8 o'clock hour. That's next.
Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make your sharp game day picks. Whether you want to get in the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between, go to oddshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
You're listening to JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Siggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now joining us for JP Weiser's Leadoff is legendary defenseman Paul Coffey. From his first time hitting the ice in Edmonton to his record-breaking 48-goal season and his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame, he's taking questions and chatting about his illustrious playing career as co-host of JP Weiser's Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan this morning. Catch up with one of the greatest defensemen of all time, brought to you by JP Weiser's Canadian Whiskey.
Paul Coffey, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for being here this morning.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. Where else would I be on this beautiful morning?
Careful, don't say things like that, because then we're going to be like, it's Thursday, it's Paul Day. We expect you in every single day. No, we really appreciate it. And I kind of want to bring in the conversation we were just having off air onto the air, because I asked you if you still skate, if you still get the opportunity to play. You said, yes, you do. But I'm wondering if you realized how much you missed it kind of when you hit the ice for the first time in a while.
Yeah, you definitely do. And you actually, when you sit on your couch and you watch the Leafs or the Oilers games, you think you could still play until you get out there and play shitty with a bunch of guys and you know it's over. But it's a lot of fun. I've hooked up with some guys on the Leafs side 3 days a week, and it's a lot of fun.
Do you, and you've been out of the game from a playing perspective, Paul, for a long time now, so maybe this has dissipated as years have gone by. Do you find yourself still craving that competition?
Well, yeah, that's really a great question, because I get asked all the time, what's the biggest thing you miss about playing? And a lot of people, the standard answer, and Ziggy will probably say the same thing. People think it's, got time in a dressing room, guys in a dressing room, the guy time. And I'm like, no, because I can make friends anywhere. I got buddies and outside the game, guys that never played the game before. But the biggest thing you do miss is the emotion. And there's nothing in life that'll give you that adrenaline rush like a win or a loss or, a five-game losing streak. And looking around that dressing room with all your teammates and saying, tonight we got to do it, guys. And that's something that life doesn't give you, but it's a lot of fun.
So with that being said, I know that when you came into the league, you were on just a very special Oilers team. After your time at Edmonton was done, were you ever able to kind of recapture that same feeling that you got when you were so new into the league?
Well, new into the league is great. People always ask me what my biggest thrill was, and it was, walking into that dressing room in Edmonton and seeing my name on the back of a jersey, which in junior we never had it prior, so I thought that was kind of cool. And getting a chance to play in the National Hockey League was great, but my time in Edmonton was fantastic. I duplicated it with a championship in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and played with some great teams in Detroit. So all the teams and all the cities I had a chance to play with were all very good.
What do you remember the most from those years at Edmonton? Because, that team, the makeup of it, what you guys accomplished, the cups you won, what's the one thing that really stuck out for you? And I'm sure you get this question a lot.
The special part about that team is there was, and we always said, there's just no place for a nervous person. And we were hard on each other. I feel the game right now, and I don't know it because I'm not right in it. I feel it's a little bit too sensitive out there. And I know myself, with Wayne, as great as we are friends and still are to this day, we had a lot of battles. If I wasn't playing like he thought or he wasn't playing like I thought, we'd go at it, and that's what made that team what it was. And, we were a bunch of young guys that wanted to be champions, and we pushed each other every single night.
With Paul Coffey, describe what that would look like. You would pull Wayne aside, Wayne would pull you aside. Was there a conversation in front of the larger, and by conversation, I mean sometimes loud voices in front of the broader locker room?
I'll give you a real quick story here. So Steve Ludzik, dear friend of mine, we did a roast for him a couple of weeks ago, and I told a story at it. And I grew up with Steve, a great hockey player, a smart hockey player, real competitive. We were playing Chicago once in the playoffs, and Luds was kind of giving it to Wayne. And Wayne came in between periods and started screaming at me to do something about it. And I said, no. I said, Wayne, you handle this one by yourself. And Semenk, you stay out of it as well. So we start the second period, and I get looked off a few times. I'm like, all right, no problem. I'm wide open on the point. Wayne doesn't give me the puck, not a problem. So he's wide open a couple times up the middle. I throw it behind him. I throw him a couple in his feet. I said, two can play this game, right? And we sat, we looked, and, we ended up trying to make the story as quick as I can. And then went out for the third period, figured out that we had to play together to win, and we ended up winning the game. And then we were in the bar a couple of beers after, and it took a couple for Wayne to loosen up and come over to me. But it was one of those things. We just pushed each other, and we played well as a team in the end. And we did argue, Messier and Anderson, all the time, but always to bring the better of the guy out.
So you guys, the way you described that story, and whatever year it was, maybe the Blackhawks were a good team, a not-so-good team.
Real good team.
A good team that year. Could it be that simple for you guys that you would just, hey, we got to get our you-know-what together here in the third period, turn it on? You had such talent. You just had the ability to turn it on in a 10-15-minute span, make it happen, win the game?
Well, we had a goalie that didn't matter, that didn't really care about goals against or anything like that. He just cared about winning. Mm-hmm. And, we'd be down some games 4-1 going into the third period. And, Sather was pretty good. He didn't yank goalies too many times. And, Grant would come in and say, guys, they're not going to get any more goals. My eyes would light up. Wayne's eyes would light up. We'd win the game 8-5. And that was but when we played, we looked at it like our job was not only to get out and win, but entertain. The Edmonton crowd is a tough, knowledgeable crowd. And we felt that if we entertained them on a nightly basis, we'd be ahead of the game. And you got to remember back then we were competing against the great CFL, Grey Cup, Edmonton Eskimo team. So we were fighting to get print, fighting to get paper time. And we tried that as a team. And we just wanted to be great.
Is there a bit of a cautionary tale in there to a certain extent where you mentioned a number of the guys that you played with. You guys had some really stacked, talented teams. But at the end of the day, it's not just talent alone that can make you successful. Maybe once or twice, but in terms of dynasty, it's not going to be enough all the time?
No, it's definitely not going to be enough. You have to have camaraderie, your whatever you want to call it, your fourth line guys are just as important as your best player on your team. And that's the beauty of those teams that Wayne made everybody feel important.
What did you guys do to make maybe the third or fourth line guys play like feel important? Because you hear stories specifically in the NFL, I guess would be my point of reference. A running back will buy his offensive line really expensive watches, be like, thanks, I'm nothing without you. Did you guys do anything to kind of pay it forward to the third and fourth line guys, or it wasn't that extreme back then?
It wasn't extreme. It wasn't planned out. It's just that every play was a big play. Every play mattered to us. I mean, you could sit there and talk about all the accolades of Wayne and Mark and Yari and Glenn scoring a bunch of goals, but if you saw a guy like Dave Semenko beat somebody up, make a great play offensively, chip the puck out, Dave Hunter, or somebody block a shot, Kevin McClellan, Donnie Jackson, Randy Gregg. I mean, that was all very, very important to us, and we were very, very cognizant of that, and we made everybody feel important. But the biggest thing is when something happened after the game, i.e. having a guy like Gretzky on your team, you got a chance to do some cool things, whether it be in California or somewhere else, but it was always a team thing. It wasn't a little huddle, a couple guys are going out, do you want to come? No. We're all going or nobody's going. That was great.
With Paul Coffey on J.P. Weiser's Leadoff. He's in studio with us for the hour. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Guys I looked up to were a Wendell Clark, a Doug Gilmore, maybe a Gary Lehman. When you were growing up, who was the one defenseman you looked up to or you wanted to be like?
Well, I mean, everybody in our era, me growing up, was Bob Uhr. But I was a massive Leaf fan. Davey Keown was my guy. The kid across the street was a Bruin fan, so I really didn't like the Bruins, so I didn't like Bobby Orr. But, of course, I loved the way he played. But when I was lucky enough to come into the league in 1980, I mean, I liked them all. When we played Montreal, I couldn't keep my eyes off Serge Savider, Larry Robinson. When we played the Islanders, when I was on the bench, I just watched everything Dennis Potvin did. You know, wanted to be that guy. You know, at the time, I remember when I was drafted to Edmonton, and we had a softball game in the summer. I went out there for a Molson slow pitch thing or something, and I was in the elevator with Barry Beck and Ron Greschner, two pretty big defensemen. And I'm standing there and I'm looking up and saying, I can't play in this league. I can't. These guys are too big. But it's, you know, our era, you know, and Ziggy, you're the same because you're talking about the guys you looked up to. And it was important to me to what the guys before did. It was important to me to know the game, to know who was ahead of me, whether it be a Doug Harvey, you know, Pierre Plot, all the guys that were puck-carrying guys before Bobby came into the league, and that's that was always important.
What do you – go ahead, Ziggy.
Oh, who helped you come into the league? Like, who's the one vet that kind of took you under his wing and really made a difference for you when you came in?
Well, my first defense partner, not my first, but the one that made the biggest difference was probably been Gary LaRivière. We had traded for him from Quebec. He came to Edmonton we were paired together, and I still remember to this day, he came over to me and said, hey, kid, I hear you got some wheels. I just kind of looked at him, and he said, you got the green light playing with me. So it just gives you a lot of confidence. But that's, you know, that whole team was confident. I remember my first year we were playing, our first training camp was in Jasper, Alberta. I was kind of sitting by myself, a shy kid, 19 years old, and all the veterans were over on the picnic tables drinking beer the whole bit, and Semenko came over to me. He said, hey, you all right? And I said, yeah. He said, you want to make some friends? So I said, sure. He says, why don't you buy the guys a beer? So I remember it was there was a beer strike, so it was Olympia beer. So I sat there and bought the boys a round of beer, and everybody was happy. I think the round was $52, and I think I had $55 on me, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boys were over there hooting, hollering the same bit. I went back to my picnic table, and Semenko came over to me. He said, you all right? He says, yeah. He says, you don't look any, you look a little unhappy. And I said, well, I don't have any money. He goes, yeah, but look at all the friends you made.
The quickest way to make friends, either buy a round of drinks or low-key pull out a pack of gum. Yeah. And then everyone's just like a seagull around you.
Yeah.
Did you say pack of smokes too or no?
No. Maybe
not in 2019.
Maybe like if you're going to share a vape. I don't know. I'm not really into that, Ziggy. I don't know what you're trying to
do. Were guys smoking? Are there all these stories true, guys in the room and outside?
in the on the toilets in between periods with their equipment on, sitting there having a dart. And God bless him, he just passed away. But Teddy Green, when he came on board, you know, one of the toughest customers that ever played the game. You know, Derek Sanderson was once asked, who's the toughest player you ever played against? And he said Teddy Green in practice. But, you know, Greeny came in. We had LaRiviere. We had Semenk. We had Kurt Brackenberry, a bunch of tough customers on our team that all smoked in between periods. Sat right in the John. And, the washrooms were 5 minutes from where you got dressed. They weren't these big, elaborate dressings as they were now. But Greeny came in and just put a stop to it. But, you know, I went to Pittsburgh in 87, 88, and... You know, 66 didn't win the odd dart in between periods either. But it's amazing. It was just kind of the way it was. And, you know, the legendary guy of all legends was Guy Lafleur. You know, they say he'd have a pack before the game, a pack in between periods, but never seemed to slow him down.
With Paul Coffey on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So take us back to the mid-1980s and the high-performance off-season training regimen of Paul Coffey. Because it's all the rage, right? Like it's a 24/7, 365 deal now, Paul, right? What were summers like, off seasons like, and what were the sort of benchmarks for you in training camp as you prepared for the regular season? How did you get into shape?
Well, I always felt the way you got into shape was never to be out of shape. It didn't matter how long you went in the playoffs, but, you know, when that final buzzer rings and hopefully you were lucky enough to win a championship or be eliminated from the playoffs or not make the playoffs, there was always a binge time when chicken wings and fries and cheeseburgers were of the norm. But
relatable.
And I still think there's nothing wrong with that stuff today. But, I always went up north. I was a big, big, big cardio guy. That was important to me. That was my game. You know, had the Stairmaster, the bike, a UBE, and did some weights, did some bench press, because you got to wear that bathing suit, right? But it was nothing like these guys nowadays. I mean, now it's a massive business, but, you know, I think like anything else, sometimes it can be too much. I mean, the most important thing is what you do on the ice. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, I hear it, how these guys can be tired in October. I don't get it.
So you've coached minor hockey for a number of years, and you see the kids now that we're talking about training in the summertime, do these guys maybe do too much when they're growing up, or is that an issue?
Well, that's we only got an hour, right? But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Parents go to me and say their kid is doing this and that. And I'm like, that's fine. That's great. I mean, I'm never trying to detour anybody from doing what they think is going to make their son better. But if you're playing a game and a half or two games a week, and you're practicing three times or twice, I think that's plenty. I think that's enough. And so much of the game, to me, is between the ears. You know, a lot of guys can skate, a lot of guys can shoot, a lot of guys can pass. But if you don't have it up in your head and that game doesn't slow down for you when the game is fast, and then that's hard to teach. But, you know, Ziggy, you're talking about coaching kids, which I absolutely enjoyed it. And people would talk about, does this guy got the hockey sense, this and that? And I said, well, you know, hockey sense is something you can't teach, but you certainly can encourage it. I think at a young age, to encourage these guys to make plays, you guys in the back end, not to dump it off the boards when you've got guys open, to get to the open ice and just play the game. Just play the game. I think that's important.
How many times have you seen or maybe heard of with players or parents, getting in the way of their kids' development, whether they're kind of the crazy hockey parent in the stands going toe-to-toe with coaches over playing time, or maybe going to the extreme in some kind of training regimen that is probably unnecessary at their age? I'm sure you've seen it all. I've definitely heard some stories myself.
Well, I'm a parent. I've got three kids, and you do get in the way just because you love your kids so much. You just do, and you want what's best for your kid. But sometimes what's best is to stay out of the way. I know my couple of things here. My father, you know, he's since passed away, but I used to say to him, Dad, how did you know where you wanted me to play or where I should have played growing up? And he said, well, I just found a good coach and I stayed out of the way. I always had the attitude that once you're in the dressing room, once you're at that rink, it was the coach's responsibility to make you better. So then I got into coaching and I said to him, so what do I do if a parent comes up to me and is complaining that his kid's not getting enough ice time? My dad's like, oh, that's easy. I said, what do you do? He said, just tell him to get the rest of the parents in a room and explain to them that their kid should be getting more ice time than their kid. And if they agree with that, come and talk to me.
Now I have my solution with parents, because
I frantically mean, taking down.
Yeah,
notes,
I'm taking a note with that, because I coached a young Nats team, that 12-year-olds, and yeah, it was always an issue with parents and what they wanted for their kids. And I'm always interested to see what former players do and how they were brought up, and then how maybe what their parents did changed how they maybe treated their kids, or how what they did with their kids playing. And it's always one of those things where it's hard to really give an answer, but the whole thing with parents coming up to you, yeah, that's definitely an issue.
What were your parents like?
My parents, they want, like everything Paul said, they wanted the best for you, right?
Yeah.
They wanted you to play a lot. They wanted you to get ice time. They would never complain to the coaches to get more ice.
The one thing a parent can't do, you can't want it more than your kid. If your daughter or your son doesn't want it, you can't. I mean, you just got to back off.
Well, here's the thing. When I started coaching this 12-year-old team, I called my mom in the first 3 weeks because we were on the ice so much. And I said, were you crazy? Like, was this what you did when I was that age? And she said, yes, it was the same schedule. And I'm like, this is absolutely crazy. I'm like, were you packing my bag? Were you pushing me out the door? And she just said, no, from the age of 7 years old, your bag was always packed. We never had to tell you to get your laundry set. We never had to bring your schedule. You used to have to make your own checklist for your equipment. You never forgot an elbow pad in 17 years. And yeah, and I question that sometimes, because I do a lot of, and I'm sure you do a lot of one-on-one work with kids and development work. And sometimes you have to almost drag the kids on the ice.
Well, those are the ones that you still try to encourage and bring along and make their experience a good one. But like you were just saying, Ziggy, and I was the same way. I got up and was going. I'd be dragging my dad to get out the door. Let's get going, never wanting to be late. But, you know, getting back to the parent thing, yeah, you can't want it more than your kid.
I have a quick question about the distinction, if you find that there is one, between having someone that you consider a hockey hero that you look up to and a hockey role model that you look up to. In this day and age, we're all well aware that there is so much access, so much press coverage, whether it's newspapers, blogs, Twitter, all of that stuff. Everything that players do is under a microscope. And I think that we give the title to players role model without them necessarily wanting it, or in some cases without them necessarily deserving it. Is there a point in a player's career where you're like, I'm going to make the conscious effort to be a role model, as opposed to just be a great player and be like, if they look up to me as a hockey hero, that's different?
That's an interesting question. I was just a kid, small town kid, grew up in Malt, and just was always not one to let my parents down. That's just what I was like. Maybe mm-hmm. that was a role model, and that led me to do other things. But I mean, it's role model. I mean, we could talk about that forever. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I know what it is, but I don't think it's, whether you're in sports, whether you're doing what you guys are doing here, everybody's a role model. Everybody has to abide by the rules. But hey, guess what? Things do happen. Especially with these kids nowadays, there is things that happen. And it doesn't have to be under a massive, massive microscope. But the one thing I do know is when you're on the ice, your responsibility is to entertain those 18,000 people that are in the crowd and behave yourself. But, I mean, things do happen. Role model thing probably gets a little carried away. You know, I chuckle all the time when they have to make a trade or they don't make a trade because somebody's good in the community. I'm like, well, what's that got to do with what they're doing on the ice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being on the ice, being on the field is what matters, not what you do in the community. Even though, and if you're great in the community and you do what you're supposed to be doing, that's icing on top of the cake.
Paul Coffey is our guest, and you go down the list of greats he played, great himself, but greats he played with: Gretzky in Edmonton, Lemieux in Pittsburgh, Yzerman in Detroit, Lindros in Philadelphia. I mean, just up and down the list. We'll get into a little bit of that, and we'll talk about the state of today's game. And you heard Paul off the top, and I'm holding you to it. Diehard Leafs fan, right? We'll get into the state of the Maple Leafs. Paul Coffey is our guest for the hour. This is JP Weiser's Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
This is JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Siggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And we're back on JP Weiser's Leadoff, and our very special co-host is a true hockey legend. He's a four-time champion, the fastest defenseman to reach 1,000 career points, and he currently holds the record for most goals in a single season by a defenseman at 48. We are absolutely thrilled to have Paul Coffey joining us in studio this morning as co-host of JP Weiser's Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and he's here to talk about some of the greatest moments of his career, catching us up on what he's up to now. And this is all brought to you by JP Weiser's Canadian Whiskey. So, Paul, just before the break, I was itemizing it and really only thinking of the people we, I think, would identify as the best players on the teams you played on, whether it was Gretzky in Edmonton or Lemieux in Pittsburgh or Yzerman in Detroit or Lindros. And that doesn't even get into the Ron Francis's of the world or the Mark Messier's of the world. You're one of the all-time great defensemen. You played with so many greats at virtually all the stops you had in your career. Not a lot of guys can lay claim to that. I mean, when you look back, are you amazed at just the raw talent, the sheer talent that you shared locker rooms with?
Yeah, I guess what automatically comes to mind is fortunate. I mean, we were chatting earlier when we're off the air, you're only as good as the guys around you, and your teammates are very important. And I was lucky. I mean, I won some championships and played with arguably the two greatest players of all time in Wayne and Mario. And, you know, I'm humbled. And to this day, I mean, the thing that made every one of those guys great, you know, Eric's here in Toronto and he's raising a family. Stevie's doing, what he did on the ice and what he continues to do off the ice, which is amazing. And then you got Wayne and Mario doing their thing and still ownership, and Wayne's involved in day-to-day stuff with the Oilers. But, I mean, the thing that makes those guys special is they're great people. They're great people. They share the accolades with the guys around them. They pushed everybody to be better. And that's what makes good players.
Now, we were talking about Sather before, and I want to ask you about some coaches. What are some Scotty Bowman stories? Do you have anything you can kind of share on the air? I know people ask me about Therrien a lot, and I kind of give them little bits and pieces, but what do you...
You had him twice, right? Pittsburgh, yep. And Detroit?
Yep. Scotty's an interesting guy, to say the least, but boy, what a great coach. I mean, his stats speak for himself. Stanley Cup's entertaining. I mean, some of his rants were good, but you know, a good man, still you know, 80 some odd years old, sharp as a tack, and loves to talk hockey. And you know, to say the least, my experiences with him weren't great, but that's okay. I've moved on. I love the game too much, and I refuse to hold any grudges with anybody.
Do you think it's more important in this day and age for coaches to change their style to accommodate players as they become more prevalent and younger in the league, or for players to fall in line with a coaching style that someone may want to have in a locker room and on the ice?
You always got these great questions.
Thank you so much.
they're so good. Well, I mean, I've been out of the game, I guess, since 2001, and you know, watching it from 35 or 40,000 feet up, and to me, it doesn't change. You know, kids are kids, players are players, parents are parents, but you probably need a bit of a hybrid on that. But the biggest thing you have to do with today's players, you need to communicate. You need to let them know where they stand at all times, good or bad. And hopefully the good far outweighs the bad. You need them on your side. I mean, players matter. And if you get them believing in you as a coach and they know that you trust them and they can trust you, good things are going to happen.
I just feel like it would be so difficult to relate to players.
Why?
If you're an older coach.
Why?
Just because of their interests, their general interests. I know people are people, and you know, the human element will always be there. We kind of all feel the same things: love, hurt, excitement, disappointment. But in terms of getting to know someone and getting involved with things that might interest them, it might be difficult, like video games, for example. It's a big polarizing issue in professional sports. I'm not that familiar with esports. I don't know if you love Call of Duty or not, but if your players are into it and that is kind of what absorbs all of their time, to kind of understand them a little bit more, I feel like you would have to at least make the effort to get a baseline knowledge in something like that, which might be more difficult.
Every now and then you come up with a good one. No, you come up with. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, sorry, that's
sorry.
Fair.
Well,
I don't agree with that. I think what she's trying to go down is, so say our time, I feel like it was more coaches. We were kind of told what to do, and now this generation, they need to know why we want them to do it, and we have to. You know, we have to the coaches nowadays have to show them, and the players want to know, well, why do you want me to do that? So is it more difficult for, say, a coach that's maybe got more years under his belt to connect with players from this generation, because they don't, you can't just tell them anymore. I find a lot of these young guys, you almost have to explain why you want them to do something, and then you have to show them what to do. But it's that side's changed. What are your thoughts on that?
Yep. I see that. And I think as a coach, if you have to keep explaining, then that player is not for you. I mean, the players got to get it. The players aren't dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at Mike Babcock behind the bench, nicely dressed man. I don't see him in bell bottoms. So he's chosen to move ahead. So why can't he get along with today's players? Right? Which is great. And I'm sure he does. I mean, I find that to be a little bit of a cop out. Because here's the way I look at it, minor hockey with the kids. And it's nothing against any of the other guys, but if you got a group of 9-year-olds that you're coaching, or 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds, and you got a 25-year-old kid behind the bench, it doesn't work, because he doesn't have the patience a parent would have behind the bench. Somebody that has their own kids, somebody that understands kids. I'm not saying he doesn't, but there's a good chance he won't. And the coaching, it's just communicating. It's got nothing to do with age. It's got nothing to do with anything. I mean, if Dave Tippett, for example, and Kenny Holland in Edmonton, they brought in a great communicative culture. They talk to those players every day. They find out, and the most important thing is to find out about the player.
Right.
Where are you from? How many kids you got? All that kind of stuff. And that's your job. You don't want to be nosy, because the player's responsibility is for 2 or 3 hours at the rink a day, and that's it. If a guy chooses to go home and play video games, good for him. But tomorrow, you're mine. I need you for 3 hours. I need you focused. And if he can't be focused, not a problem. You're not going to play here. Plain and simple.
So we're going to get in the Leafs here in a second. But first, I want to make sure I ask you about your skates. Because as a player growing up, there was a lot of talk about what kind of skates you used to wear and that they were smaller on you. And I have crooked toes now because I wore smaller skates my whole minor hockey league career up until pro. And I know there's rumors that you had smaller skates, and then there's rumors you had the longer blades. And I would always play around with my skates because I thought I would skate like Paul Coffey, and I couldn't, obviously. What's the rumors behind your skates? What did you used to do with them? And were they a part of what made you such a great skater?
Well, I mean, Ziggy, don't sell yourself short. You were a good skater. There's nothing wrong with you. Your toes might be a little cramped, but it was important to me that my skates fit. And when I wanted to turn left, they came left with me at right. And there's nothing worse than having loose skates. And you got to remember back when I played pro, 1980, I mean, you got one pair of skates a year, and they could be wet. They could weigh 5 pounds each. And they were leather, and they were broke down, so you needed them as tight as you could get them. And, you know, I was a bit of a risky player in my own end, and when I wanted to turn left, they better be coming with me.
With Paul Coffey on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Before we get you out of here, the state of the Maple Leafs, you watch this team play, Paul. What have you seen out of this group so far this season?
Well, listen, I love the game, period. You know, I'm a huge Oilers fan, still doing work with them and watch them every single night, but do get a chance to watch Toronto as well. And a couple things, I don't understand how it, you know, okay, so a guy like Tyson Barrie, great player in Colorado. Seems to me, I don't know the kid. I haven't chatted with him, but it seems to me that he's not playing the way he can play. whether he's told not to play that way, whether he lacks confidence, I don't understand. But, you know, I've watched Mitch Marner since he was a kid. Great hockey player. I mean, Austin Matthews has come in. Great hockey player. Riley on the point. But for some reason, they just need to get some continuity, whether it's something in the dressing room, whether it's caring about each other, and whether it's just beating other teams. You know, I watched a game the other night, I guess a couple of weeks ago. They were down 1-0 in the first period to Mini. I'm watching it with my son, my 16-year-old boy. Second period starts. They're up 4-1 at the end of the second period. Morgan Riley's got 4 assists. I'm thinking, like, wow, this is good. I wonder if he knows what the record for assists for a defenseman is, because maybe he's going to be flying in the third period. Then they come out in the third period and they lose 1-0. And I'm thinking to myself, as a fan, I would feel ripped off, because those guys are good enough to have won that game 8-3. And sometimes you got to let the boys go and let them have some fun and entertain the people that are watching. But, you know, hopefully they can get it together. Hopefully, you know, Edmonton's off to an incredible start. Connor's doing his thing. Leon's doing his thing. And hopefully we can get a lot of Canadian teams in the playoffs.
Well, we'll see if the Leafs can get it together. The Oilers, it's nice for their fans to have a team that they can get behind. I was there for a year, and it was a painful year, so it's nice to see them doing good things. Thank you so much for coming in today. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. JP Weiser's Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I learned a lot from him. I think he learned a lot from myself. We got a great, we were great partners on the court, and that year and a half that we were playing together, it was a great 1-2 punch in Toronto.
That is the just retired Jose Calderon from Good Show with Ben Ennis and JD Bunkus yesterday morning. And Good Show has a special programming announcement in the 10 a.m. portion of their show. That's the Leafs Hour portion of Good Show. So listen for a special programming announcement. We won't let the cat out of the bag, but we are looking forward to hearing it. And one more cue up for Good Show. How would you, and by you I mean you, like to fly on board the Air Canada fan flight to see the Maple Leafs play in Florida in January? Stay tuned during Good Show, or go to sportsnet.ca/590 for details. Man, my sense of Paul Coffey. So I think, peel the curtain back, this is an obvious comment to make, but when you work in radio, oftentimes you expect the best interviews and hope for the best interviews to be in studio.
Yep.
Because you read body language, there's a comfort. Paul Coffey, kind of a low-key guy in the way that he speaks, but there is zero BS behind that voice. I mean, when he talks hockey, you're listening.
I do some events with him, alumni events. We do the road hockey to conquer cancer. I see him at different alumni stuff, and you don't get a chance to usually talk to guys, especially guys you grew up watching.
Right.
So it's great to have him in studio.
Are you giddy?
Of course.
That's so nice.
Well, I grew up watching him at the Maple Leaf Gardens, right? And I've always wanted to ask about his skates, because legit, that was a real story. I would have smaller skates growing up, and I would be in pain at times in my feet just because he would wear smaller skates. But that's how it works.
How crooked are your toes?
There's only two on each side that don't really line up. Is that bad?
Oh, no, so I thought you were going to say you only have two toes on each side. I was like, what?
So 40% of your toes, almost half of your toes,
I guess,
are gnarled.
That would be 40%. Yikes. So yeah, kids want to do what they want, what they do.
I've often complained that the only human condition that we are exposed to on TV commercials is the toenail fungus. I don't understand that. Hmm. We need to social media your feet.
No, that's gross.
Okay, here we go. Let's do it.
Here we go.
Internet.
Get your toes off of the desk, you psycho. Oh my God, that smells so bad. Here's the thing though. The problem is that Paul Coffey set Mike Zigomanis up to get fired from U of T. He gave him coaching advice, which I think if I was in your position, I would follow to a T. Listen, I coached basketball back in the day. I coached a college team. If I got back into it, I would take some of the things he was saying as well. How can you not listen to a champion and apply that information? But you're about to go in guns blazing. UFT kids, let me tell you something right now. If you're listening, do not test your coach for the next 10 days. Because eventually it'll kind of wane off. But Mike Zingamandis,
he's about to change.
He's coming in hot.
He's coming in steamy, spicy, hot, fiery. Like, do not test him.
I got some great advice, and I can't wait to get into the room today. 11 o'clock practice. Watch out.
You're just going to go in with a pen, and when kids give you an attitude, you're just going to put a scratch across their jersey. Be like, you're a literal scratch today. I'm sorry. Like, we only get one penny, coach.
I think what you should do is when they challenge you back, this is why, and then play the Paul Coffey clip.
Paul Coffey. Yeah. Paul Coffey told me to do it. What are they going to say to that?
Well, I'll try and use that next time I'm in jail with a mugshot. Like, oh,
Paul Coffey
told me to do it. I don't know how that's going to fly.
Sunday morning at 3 a.m., we're getting texts from Ashley. Can you come bail me out? The Paul Coffey told me to do it bit isn't working with the officer.
It didn't work. They're Hoops fans.
Oh, my God. Leafs and Golden Knights down at Scotiabank Arena tonight. So we'll break that down bright and early tomorrow morning.
I have one request for the Toronto media going down to the Scotiabank Arena today. Can you please ask Ryan Reeves about Evander Kane?
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
They're not going to go there.
Can you please ask him about his markers?
Don't ask Marc-Andre Fleury about what it takes to win a Stanley Cup and whether Toronto can do it.
We have to pull coffee about that today. We don't need Marc-Andre Fleury's advice. We need to rile this back up, please.
Ryan Reeves thinks Evander Kane, I almost called him Patrick. Evander Kane needs to get into the gym more.
Oh my gosh.
We'll get a follow-up. Good show with a big announcement in the 10 a.m. hour. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Have a wonderful day.